Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
WEEI.com/Jimmy Fund. Moxie Soda. Live your life with Moxie.
Family meeting time.
Yeah.
All right, so sometimes we pre-record the top of the hour spots. So let me just say this live. This hour of Mark and Hart is brought to you by the fine folks at DiStefano Hair Restoration.
Much better.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It's like you handed in your paper to the teacher and you sent the rough draft.
You're supposed to like...
I forgot to put my name on the paper.
Yeah, Joe, you're supposed to take off the one where we F up and, you know, not play that one in the air. But it's all good. It's all good.
It's more entertaining now. They got double dip, right?
Got double
more for their money.
Yes, there's no question. And we love the folks at DiStefano Hair Restoration.
And it made it more memorable.
That's true, too.
Some of those reads just kind of fade off into the...
That's it.
People will remember.
Yep.
DiStefano. You need hair, go to DiStefano.
Yep, you do. 617-779-7937. We have been into the whole, and that's everybody. I mean, we play the hits here. You guys want to talk about the Josh Gordon situation with the New England Patriots? And so that's what we're going to do. Go right back to the phone calls. And I'm glad this guy who was about to go to call back in. Mike. Mike, I don't want to give your last name. You want to give your last name. I feel uncomfortable giving your last name. So I'm just going to say Mike in Mass. What's up, Mike?
How's it going, guys? I'm a huge fan of the Mark and Hart Show. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for listening.
Absolutely. Yeah, my phone died the first time I called. I was a little bummed out, so I called you back. I'm glad to be on the show. I'm in recovery myself, and I'm a diehard Pats fan, you know, and I really support Josh Gordon. And I wanted to touch on the issue that he seems to be messing up during the season rather than he does better during the off season. You know, I believe it's because he has more time to focus on himself. And as somebody who goes to meetings every single day, I don't know if Josh Gordon does that, but that may be something that helps. You know, I go to meetings every day. I have a sponsor who I work with daily, and I do the step work. And for me, as a chronic relapser, this time I have just about 4.5 months, and it's been the biggest difference that I've never done the meeting thing, and I'm finally doing it, and it's completely changing my life.
What would you say to Josh Gordon if he was in with you in recovery? If he said, "Hey, Mike, I'm just trying to stay straight here." What would you say to him?
Honestly, I'd ask him if he wanted to go to a meeting.
Right. Let's say he was in the meeting with you, and he's like, "Listen, I just find it hard. There's times that my mind wanders, and when I have some idle time, and I can't overcome this addiction." And then, like, I just curious that, you know, take us inside of in terms of going to a meeting. Like, what are the keys to sort of staying on that path of the straight and narrow?
You know, like I said, the working with a sponsor is really key. Rather than picking up a drug, when you're in that moment where you want to pick up a drug or a drink, the key is to pick up the phone and call somebody, you know, to get you out of your own head. But like the three pillars of sobriety, and it's said all the time in meetings, is honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. So for me this time around, it wasn't until I got completely honest with myself, you know, and completely surrendered to the program. For me, you know, my biggest defect of character is my ego. So I had to learn that I have to give up my will and, you know, really believe in a higher power. And for me, that's God. So when I turned my will over to God, things really started to change in my life. And working the steps is really key. Like right now, I'm on the fourth step, which is you write all your resentments down. And to put it all on paper, it's very therapeutic. So for Josh Gordon, you know, I'd say something like that is huge. Definitely working with a sponsor as well.
All right, Mike, thanks for the call.
Yeah, that was very interesting.
The thing I find most interesting about this is that there's clearly no one thing. And we actually had somebody tweet us talking about everybody has one thing, but everybody's one thing is different. The way to try to become sober. And for him, it was a child with some issues. And once he realized he wasn't providing what the child needed, the support that... It was like, what the hell am I? Like, that was the scared straight moment or the slap in the face. And you just wonder what that is for Josh Gordon. And, you know, it's interesting. Mike brings up the idea, is Josh Gordon better off in the offseason? Which would indicate maybe he should be out of football. If he's more successful in his life, in his sobriety, in his addiction in the offseason, then is football a bad thing? Or is he more successful in season because everybody talks about the structure? But the structure also creates the opportunity for him to relapse and the pressure.
I mean,
but I would also say, is he successful in the offseason? Maybe he's having lapses in the offseason that no one knows about. Because there's no 7 a.m. meeting for him to miss.
Right.
There's no necessarily drug test that he failed or whatever. So maybe there are relapses. It's just, okay, it's March 4th and no one knew.
We would know about it because Mike Reese or Tom Curran would report it.
Right.
So we don't know about that.
Yeah.
We don't know. Joe in Providence, you're up next on Mark and Hart. What's up, Joe?
Yeah, the previous caller laid out a dynamite case for sobriety. But I just want to add this, that sometimes when you get too tough with people, you could wind up losing their life. And the other thing is, sometimes there's an underlining agenda that they're self-medicating to address. And if they could get the help to address whatever that underlining thing is. My brother, man, his mind wouldn't stop racing. And then he had so much mental pain. And the only thing that he could do was just medicate himself and rest, go to sleep. But otherwise, during the day, his mind was racing, and he couldn't stop it. And it was, like, very painful for him. You know, so there may be something underneath of all of that, that if he could address that and maybe have some sort of medication to help slow all of that down, he'd probably be okay. But the rules are so stringent on medicine.
Well, some of it he has, I mean, he's been through programs. He's been through therapy. He's, I believe, been medicated at various times for anxieties and different mental issues. And as of yet, he hasn't found the exact cocktail of those various outlets for his issues that works for him.
Because
there's always been the relapse.
Right.
But, you know, this is, we're talking about Josh Gordon. There are millions upon millions and millions of people that are dealing with the exact same thing or an offshoot of the exact same thing. Addiction.
Hey, can I say this to you? I don't want to interrupt, but you look at the kind of money that he has access to and he can't stop. That's got to say something.
Yep.
Serious.
Yeah, that it's not a choice, right? That this isn't a simple topic with a simple solution.
Well, that's why, by the way, Joe, when I said it, like, because under my understanding and when Chris Curtis talked about his situation at the end of last year when Josh Gordon had the relapse, you know, it's called a disease. And that's the understanding. I mean, and someone's like, oh, stop calling it a disease. It's not a disease. It is a disease, right, Joe?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a disease.
Right.
I had the disease and I had to get help.
All right. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it's, you know, it's... You could tell. It hits home with a lot of people.
Well, and it's not reasonable, right? There's a lack of reason involved sometimes. Like, we try to bring a reasonable perspective to it, and you go back to Chris Curtis. That story he told about, I think he was driving to Connecticut on the Mass Pike and was already drunk or intoxicated, got pulled over by a state trooper, somehow got out of it.
Yep.
And what was the first thing he did?
Drink.
Right. Went to the liquor store. And, like, that's not a reasonable connection. Most people would say... X happens, and your Y reaction is you're scared straight, you drive home, and you're maybe that keeps you from drinking for a week, a month, a year. His reaction was, I need to drink more. So that right there tells you, don't try to, you know, make this an XYZ equation like it's algebra and it's just easy to figure out. It isn't. This is English class where there's a million different answers and interpretations to this art that's in front of you, and that's why it's so hard. Because even the experts don't have the answer. Right. There's no direct answer. If Mark James is an addict and Andy Hart is an addict, we have two different issues and could be two very different solutions to our issues.
That's right. 617-779-7937. And some of it comes perhaps genetics. I mean, Josh Gordon's parents, if I'm not mistaken, they had issues with substance abuse, or at least his mom did. Right.
I believe so. And it's often genetic. I mean, you see a lot of families. And then
You also see, I remember this from health class, like in high school, that there's different forms of addiction. Like, some people think just the alcoholic every day is drunk when he wakes up, is drunk when he goes to bed. That's the alcoholic. Or there's the binge drinker. That's a form of alcoholism. They can only drink to get drunk. They may not drink every day, but when they drink, they are getting fall down stupid drunk. Or the functioning alcoholic that was sort of glorified in the old days. Oh, he gets home from work at 4 and he has a cocktail and then another cocktail and another cocktail and then he goes to bed. Well, if he has to do that every day to get through the day, to, you know, after work, that's a form of addiction and alcoholism, right? So these aren't all the same. So there's not all the same solutions because it's not all the same problem.
And another problem is that has to do with it is the self-medicating. That's right. That's something that...
And that's really what a lot of it is. People are either depressed or stressed or anxious or physically medicating because, like in the NFL, there's soreness, there's back pain, there's whatever. That's definitely a layer of it.
Bob in Worcester. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how are you?
Good, Bob. Good afternoon.
I think it is XYZ. I think the underlying reasons for addiction are pretty simple. I wanted to comment. The guy was probably on an hour ago, and he said the addict or alcoholic has to want to do it for himself. There is no such addict or alcoholic. No addict or alcoholic wants to give up their addiction. The problem is most, if not all, addicts and alcoholics had childhoods which were based on shame. Maybe their parents were alcoholics and blamed every problem on their kids. Maybe they were sexually abused. Maybe they were physically. Maybe they were verbally abused. But they enter life with what's called a shame core. Huh. They are never able to develop self-esteem and therefore to make good choices. I've been sober in AA 3 or 4 times. 12 years was the longest. But every alcoholic tells you when they took their first drink, they were able to inhabit their body in a comfortable way. They discovered parts of their personality that had been so shamed that they hid them.
Got it, Bob. Let me just state this. You mentioned something about childhood. This is from the GQ article about Josh Gordon. He said, quote, initially it started for me a lot of childhood and adolescent trauma-based fear I was using in my childhood. That environment brought me into that a lot sooner than a normal, whatever normal is. Kids should be brought into that to be able to make a decision on their own of what to do. I didn't want to feel anxiety. I didn't want to feel fear. I didn't plan on living to 18. Day-to-day life, what's going to happen next? So, and I mentioned this, so you self-medicate with Xanax, marijuana, codeine to help numb these nerves so you can just function every day. That became the norm from middle school to high school. So by the time I got into my 20s, I was on an accelerated pace, end quote. That was Josh Gordon in the GQ article.
Right.
So the self-medicating is, I mean, that was a big thing.
It is, but I also think, you know, the last caller said, you know, it all comes from childhood. I think some of that may be true. I don't think that's the case for everybody. I think there are people who are alcoholics who grew up in pretty damn near perfect families.
Oh, God.
But I also think there's plenty of alcoholics that grew up in abusive families or stressful families, or it's they're predisposed to it genetically, or they're predisposed to it socially. They see their father as an alcoholic, and for whatever reason, they just say, well, that's life. That's how you become a man when you grow up. We also have the issue that there's sort of societal pressures that, like, everybody drinks, right? There's beer commercials everywhere. There's country songs. There's some country song right now where one of the lines is, I turned to Miller Lights when I was 21. In, like, a fun-loving way. Like,
yeah.
But for some people, that's not fun. It ruins their life. Like, they turn to it, and then it snowballs, and it overcomes their life. And, you know, we all drink at some point. Or, I shouldn't say we all, but most of the population at some point chooses to try alcohol, correct? Whether that's 13, 17, 21, 30, friends go to a bar and you have a drink, or you're in college and you're binge drinking, or you're in high school and somebody snuck something into the woods. Everybody tries at some point, right? And some people, it then takes over. It's like there's a spark and you lit the fuse, and where's that fuse going to go? You follow it and it leads to bad things, alcoholism, and takes more control. Some people can have 3 beers every Friday night after work with their boys and then do it again the next Friday, and it's no big deal. It's just what – that's just the wide variance of the way it is. But there's some pressure. Like, everybody – like, if you were an alcoholic, it's almost like, you know, being gay, where everybody assumes, oh, you're going after girls this weekend to another guy in the locker room. Well, why are you assuming that? What if I'm gay and I'm interested in going to find a man this weekend? There's a pressure there. And if you're an alcoholic, there's a pressure. Hey, you guys want to get drinks after practice? Well, you just ask an alcoholic if he wants to get drinks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I had a guy the other day, I was talking about things, and I said something about, yeah, you know, the fathers just went out and got beers, you know, between, oh, baseball tournaments, between games. We went and had a couple beers at the bar. Well, you know, I won't be doing that. I've been sober for 30 years. Like, I made an assumption there that was, he was fine with it. I don't think it's a big, but you know what I mean? Like, we make these assumptions in everyday life that put pressure on the other person because they're not in the majority.
Well, I think, too, when you get into a professional work environment, or you're, like you said, you're playing softball or whatever, you're golf, there's always that, like, you're going to meet in a social situation where there's alcohol.
Right.
That's just sort
of golf. The drink cart pulls up.
Right.
Well, 3 of the 4 guys in the foursome are going to grab a beer because they're going to have 3 beers over the back 9. And the 4th guy's an alcoholic, and he's now in sort of a pressure situation. Do I crack here? Boy, I'd really like that beer. It'd be fun to hang with the boys and have 3 beers over the back 9. But where does that go? Because I've been a year, a month, a week, whatever, sober. And these are things as non-alcoholics or non-minorities we don't think about in everyday life. But there's a pressure there. There's a decision there.
Joe is up next in Cranston. Hey, Joe.
Hey, guys. I've been in recovery for 16 years now. I smoked my first joint in 8th grade in 73 and did my last hit of crack cocaine in 2003, okay? Wow. The thing I've learned in recovery in the last 16 years is, first of all, if he doesn't want to stop for himself, if he doesn't want to stop, he has virtually no chance of making it. One of the other things that I learned is one of the biggest determining factors is who is he hanging around with. Okay, if you're hanging around with the wrong people, you have a chance. But if you're not hanging around with the right people, or you're hanging with yourself, which in recovery, there's a saying, if you're hanging with yourself, you're hanging with the wrong crowd.
Right.
You virtually have no chance whatsoever. I've known dozens of people that have passed away from this issue. With addiction, I believe it's a disease once you are actively addicted. You make a choice to start using when almost on a daily basis. That's a choice you make. When you reach the point of not having any money left, no friends left, that's when it hits you. Am I sick and tired of being sick and tired? Because nobody changes, virtually nobody changes without experiencing pain. I went through, you know, I went into long-term treatment once, came out, spent 2.5 years clean and sober, lost my way. I got away from going to meetings and recovery, and I relapsed. I had to go back into treatment for another 10 months. luckily, when I get out, I made friends with people in recovery. And, you know, I can't hang around with any of my old friends. I can now because I've finally reached the point, I think, that I've basically grown up, matured mentally. That was a completely different guy 16 years ago.
Right. Wow. Congratulations, by the way, Joe. Congrats on being able to stay clean for so long.
Well, I appreciate it. That's, you know, I hate hearing that because I'm just who I'm supposed to be, okay? But, you know, I have a lot of respect and admiration for the people that white-knuckle recovery they want to use every single day, and they stay clean. I really don't know many that complete that process but and still stay clean. The guys that are... You don't want to quit. You want to use today. You know, if you don't reach that point of being sick and tired, you know, there's virtually no chance, you know, to stay clean. And
yeah, good phone call there. Hey, you know, the one thing I will say, and I don't think Josh Gordon, it's in his personality to do this, but I got to give a lot of credit to the former NFL wide receiver and trying to kind of get back in the league, Brandon Marshall, about mental health illness.
Mm-hmm.
He spoke about it when it, like way before it was sort of, and still it's not, you know, completely widely accepted in society, but he made it sort of like, okay, here's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, all world talent, and he's going on inside the NFL on Showtime with Boomer Esiason and Phil Sims and talking about what it's in, and James Brown about how this guy's suffering from mental health illness, and he's bringing it to the forefront to let everybody know that, hey, you know, you could be a star wide receiver in the NFL, or you could be Joe Schmo, and this is what it is. I know Josh Gordon doesn't have that personality. He's definitely introvert. But
certainly.
Like,
but that could be part of the problem as well. Maybe trying to get out of that introverted personality down the road. I'm not saying now, like suddenly you flick a switch and you're going to become this spokesperson and face and personality for addiction. But maybe that's part of it. What, you know, he, one of the last callers just said it. If you're hanging with yourself, you're hanging with the wrong crowd.
Yeah.
And maybe that's part of his problem. Maybe he needs to find whatever that right crowd is, whether that's one person, three people, a sponsor, you know, Matthew Slater. Maybe it's examples. You know, Brady talked about that, you know, he's sort of supported him, and they had the throwing session. There were sort of some implications. Maybe they had dinner. Maybe that's a positive. Maybe just seeing what he's missing out on, you know, whatever life could be if I went so-called straight and narrow.
Yeah.
Like this guy with, you know, a beautiful family, a beautiful wife, kids, you know, the world is just at his footsteps with Tom Brady. Maybe Josh Gordon sees that, and maybe that's it. That's what he wants to get. And I don't know. Maybe it isn't. Maybe that makes him feel bad about what he's missed out on. Maybe it goes the other way.
The question is for him, and he talked about this, I mean, going back to his childhood, is that he's been dealing with this since his middle school years. And he said, quote, I didn't plan on living to 18,
yep.
End quote. He goes, day-to-day life, what's going to happen next? So you self-medicate with Xanax, marijuana, codeine to help numb those nerves so you can just function every day. That became the norm from middle school to high school. So by the time I got in my 20s, I was already on an accelerated pace. I can tell you this, one guy who hopefully is out of his life, I know they were friends, and this was certainly not someone that was good for him in his recovery, was Johnny Manziel.
To a degree, yes, I agree with you, unless maybe that's the guy where they can commiserate and turn the corner together, right?
Yeah, I just think he never needs more know. Tom Brady in his life.
Because when you go to AA meetings, right, it's fellow alcoholics. Mm-hmm. There's somebody leading the meeting, but it's other people, and some of it is the, you know, misery loves company and the group support of the outside world doesn't understand. But when I come to this meeting with these 8, 10, 12 other people, I can be honest because they've all been through it. They've all bottomed out. They know what I'm talking about. You just, that's where I get back to. I think you just never know what the answer solution, you know, is for any individual because it's different. Every call we get, we're getting calls from 10, 20 addicts just rolling through here. They all look at it differently, whether they wanted to or you can't ever want to. No addict wants to get cured. No, you have to want to be cured. Or it's an illness. It's not an illness. You have to bottom out, you know, scared straight. Well, scared straight doesn't work for everyone.
No.
There's no one solution.
I mean, I got to admit, that father, that still stuck with me from last hour, the father who said he left his daughter in jail and would not bail her out for 50 days until she finally said, okay, that's enough for me. That's enough to sober me up.
And I bet you there's fathers out there who went a similar route, left their daughter in jail.
And probably,
guess what? She came out and she said, you're not my father anymore, and I'm going back to the streets and the drug and the community that actually supports me, and it goes the other way. There's no one answer.
Yeah. All right, we will get back to all your phone calls now. It's time for trending. I wonder if this feels like a Mustard and Johnson rejoin song.
A little bit.
Yeah. Feels like a Mustard.
But we were Mustard and Johnson last week.
Yeah, we were for a couple hours. Yep, we were. And thankfully, those guys are back on the air today. And Larry Johnson didn't show up to the studio and like literally say that, hey, you're not on today. That's not a good thing at all.
That's a half a step from your key card doesn't work.
Yeah.
The Eric Mangini. I'm trying to get back into Gillette. Why is this beeping red and not beeping green?
Yes. Yeah, don't worry, Mangini. That key card's never going to work.
Did you hear him defending the Patriots, though, this week? Some good audio. He tied Rob Parker into a pretzel, whooped his ass on national TV.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a pro-Brady stance, and Parker was left speechless.
Yeah, well, and you talk about, not to get out of a tangent here, but the biggest regrets in his life is what he did turning it, because you can see that you can leave and come back. Josh McDaniels did it. You can come back if you're on great terms, but if you want to play that card and you want to burn that bridge to Foxborough, Belichick is not he's not forgiving that.
And I don't think it's just the videotaping and things of that. There were other issues there. Going to the Jets being the first issue, first and foremost. Maybe some assistant coaches, some various issues along the way where Eric Mangini made himself an outcast, and I don't think he's ever getting back in.
I remember, if I'm not mistaken, after the 05 season playoff loss to Jake Plummer and the Broncos, Mangini was trying to poach assistant coaches right, like on the plane ride from Denver.
There was some issues with coaches. I forget the exact details. My CTE kicks in occasionally.
Oh, okay.
But there were definitely issues, and he wanted to be a head coach so badly, and I think he kind of went against some advice at times from Belichick, and just it snowballed to being outside the family. And you're out, you're not getting back.
Yeah,
in.
Yeah. You don't mess with the Godfather. That's for sure. Because he will. Yeah, like I said, he certainly has a memory like in an elephant. Brian in New London. Hey, Brian.
Yeah, Mark, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. So I was listening to the debate, and I once heard an expert on the radio who said that it's a problem when we change the composition of plants. So, for instance, whole foods don't cause obesity. So we can agree on that. Let's say marijuana or even coca leaves. They become problematic when people distort the composition or synthesize things from them. People use coca leaves down in South America for altitude sickness. Of course, when you change the makeup of the coca leaves into coke and then from there other things, that's when it becomes a problem. And I think that's where maybe, you know, if the debate can start with legality on some things, even marijuana. Marijuana as a plant itself, you know, the addiction issue and everything, we can all debate that. But I think that it just becomes problematic when you let people, companies or greed, start to synthesize or change the composition of a plant like marijuana into something that becomes problematic.
Can I ask a question? So how would tobacco fall on that?
Well, I think tobacco, I think tobacco is legal for people. I think I'm not a smoker now. I quit smoking 28 years ago.
No, but I mean, isn't it bad for you without human you keep synthesizing it or whatever you keep saying, like if you smoke tobacco, it can cause cancer, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the issue is when it becomes a problem in people's lives, like tobacco will affect the user and the people around them, secondhand smoke. And I think it's a controlled substance up until like the age of 21, I think it's, or 18, you can't buy cigarettes legally.
Right.
So I think it's a bad idea, yes, to have tobacco. I don't necessarily think marijuana should be legalized for anyone under the age of 21, let's say. So I think that there should be laws in place. I agree with all the laws that are in place. I think that, you know, when we start to synthesize things, let's say these vapor products now they're coming out with, you know, I wouldn't put any trust in any of those companies. If you go to any convenience store, you see all these synthesized marijuana, synthetic marijuana, and all these other things.
That's what got Chandler Jones kicked off of the Patriots, Brian. Appreciate the phone call. Our producer, Joe Cortez, gave us the sheet here. CBD. CBD effects does not get you high when it comes to marijuana. THC, cannabidiol, is that how it's pronounced? Cannabis, but like, is that just okay?
Yeah, cannabis.
That gets you high. That's where it decreases your motivation, cognitive ability, creativity. The thing about Josh Gordon, he's been doing this for so long. Like he said, this was just about him functioning, trying to get through the day. So this is going back to his middle school years, talking, you know, 12, 13, 14. I mean, it's a long time that he's been doing this. So now you have to kick that habit.
And that's the other thing is the habit, the addiction. I don't know which falls under which. I'm not a doctor. But, you know, people that have to have their coffee at, you know, a certain time in the day, have to stop to get an afternoon coffee or have to have chocolate or, you know, the whole idea of emotional eating, you know, turning to a tub of ice cream when you break up or something. I mean, those are all different levels of the same type of potential or gambling. You know, those who turn to the rush of gambling to get them through the day.
Listen, there are celebrities and just normal people. Like, there are addictions to porn.
Right.
There are addictions to everything.
How's that going?
I don't know. I wouldn't know. I've been addicted to sweets, candy, you know, soda, like that stuff. That's my normalcy, drinking Coca-Cola.
And where does the line go from habit to addiction?
Yeah.
You know, if you have a coffee every morning, do you just have a habit where you get up or you're addicted to that coffee? Can you not go a day? Do you get headaches? Do you have, you know, withdrawal from your coffee? I mean, I don't know all the answers to all these things, but there's just these arbitrary lines. What's okay? It's sort of like the whole steroid era in baseball. Well, greenies have been around forever. How come that's not performance enhancing? Was that not performance enhancing 80 or 100 years ago?
Helps in recovery.
So we draw these lines as what's considered a drug, what's considered an addiction, what's considered performance enhancing, and what isn't.
Will in Stoughton is up next. What's up, Will?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Good.
I like the show. First time caller.
Thank you. Call back another time.
So listen to I agree with you 100% about what you were just saying, but getting to back to Josh Gordon, like with addiction, I've been in recovery for a while now. And with addiction, it's a disease. Like it is a disease, but it's dis-ease with self. I too, growing up, you know, I was afraid to go to school. I was afraid to go home because I had, you know, tough parents. I always felt like an outcast. All the things you guys are talking about, you know, you're right. It isn't one thing, and you can't say this is the one fix that will fix Josh Gordon. For me, I went to meetings. I did the sponsorship. I wrote the steps, and I still couldn't stay clean. I had to go in. You know, what I would say to Josh is win today. He's an athlete, so his brain is, you know, programmed to be, he's competitive by nature. So you got to talk to him at his level, right? So I would say to Josh, just win today. If you can get through one day, because that's all we all have is one day. If you're in the program, you know what I'm talking about. If you woke up earlier than me, then you have more sobriety than I do. All we have is today. So win today and keep it one day at a time. And I would suggest for him to continue to seek solutions. When you stop looking for answers, now you're in trouble. Now you're in that dark place. You're upstairs and, you know, in bad company in your own head. I've done cognitive behavioral therapy. For me, it was like a cocktail of, I had to use meetings, I had to use cognitive behavioral therapy. I also had to get over, you know, traumas that happened in my life, because all these things contribute to how listen, I also wanted to say one last thing, right? When you're using a substance, if you use it long enough, like he claims to have used it, believe it or not, like, your brain is, when you're not using, your chemicals are all messed up in your head. Once you take that, let's say for him, it's pot. Once he takes that first hit in his brain, all the chemicals, once he takes the hit, they all come back to normal, and that's his baseline. So then typically what happened to me was I would pick up and get high and say, well, and I'd have that moment of clarity after I picked up. And somebody else said it's a choice. It's a choice until you take that first one. And once you have the first one, your choices are gone. It is no longer a choice. You have the choice on the first time you decide to use again. And once you've crossed that bridge and you go past that, you know, threshold, the choice is no longer taken away. So for most people, like an alcohol.
Let me just say this too. As we know from a couple weeks ago, the 22-year-old daughter of Robert Kennedy died. How do you pronounce her name? Sayoris Kennedy Hill.
I'm not sure.
She was the daughter of Courtney Kennedy Hill and Paul Hill. Paul Hill spent 15 years in prison and all that. She, you know, that's a situation where she perhaps, as the caller just so articulately put, probably stop seeking answers and solutions. When you do that, that's what happens. All right. Continue on your phone calls on this 617-779-7937 on Mark and Hart.
So you want to be a rock superstar and live large, big house, five cars, red charge, coming up in the world, don't trust nobody, gotta look over your shoulder.
617-779-7937. Every time I hear this song, I think of Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke in Training Day.
Yep.
Great movie. Great scene in that movie. And man, Denzel, he won the Oscar, like, I believe, you know, the following February, but it wasn't for his role in this movie. It was for another movie. And he should have won it for Training Day. Or he might have won it the year after. And it was a make good because he didn't win it for Training Day. But he should have won. Oh, that rogue cop character, Alonzo. Yep. Oh, that was unbelievable. Oh, he's so good. 617-779-7937.
You know, Denzel's like the only go-to actor. We used to do at Patriots.com, Patriots Football Weekly, these little questionnaires about players, you know, getting to know how, you know, light stuff. And always, who would play you in a movie?
Oh, Denzel, right?
It was always Denzel.
Like, okay, I'm like, sure.
Is there anyone else we can turn to? Like, they all wanted Denzel to play them in a movie.
Chadwick Boseman, you could do.
Yeah, maybe him now. He's
now
a little more new age.
Michael B. Jordan.
Maybe. I think Denzel would still get it. He might be getting a little old for some of these young guys to say Denzel, but there was a stretch there for 10 years. You could, 99% of the responses. And I'm not just talking about the black players. Half the white guys, just Denzel was like the actor of the time period for a long time.
There's certain movies, man, no matter how many times they're on, I will watch. Goodfellas, Training Day, and I love American Gangster when he played Frank Lucas with Russell Crowe.
Yep.
Oh, that was so good.
He's pretty good now.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Had a nice career.
I would say so. Let's go to Michael in South Boston. What's up, Michael?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, Mike.
I've been listening to this for a little bit, and I guess the only thing I got to say is I'm an alcoholic. I'm currently in a relapse. This is like the only disease out there where you're shamed, ridiculed, and put down for it. We don't make this choice. This chose us. I have a teenage daughter and a younger daughter who I sacrifice and give everything I have to them, anything they want, anything they need. The one thing they ask me to do is to be sober, and it's the one thing I cannot give them. We're victims. Just like a cancer patient, or anybody else. We don't choose this. I've been shamed, embarrassed, and assaulted for something that's out of my control. We're people too. We're sick. There's no chemotherapy. There's no injection, no cure for us. It's a process that we have to go through that could take years upon years. and we still may not find a way. And it's killing us on a daily basis.
Michael, I appreciate your honesty and transparency. That's sad when you hear that, he says his daughters say, you know, they will just want him, his sobriety. And
right.
He says, I can't give
you
it
can't.
To you. I can't do that.
And that's where you get back to, there's no one answer for each victim, each addict, and it's trial and error. And unfortunately, some people, it sounds like the trial and error is a little shorter, and then you have others where the trial and error goes 10, 20, 30 years, relapses, you know, painful moments with family and friends and work and all that. And as he said, you're not even sure you're going to get to the solution, the way out for you. And it's a sad reality of our world.
Diamond Dave in Orlando, which is where I will be 1 week from today at the Miami Hurricanes Florida Gators game at Camping World Stadium. Hello, Diamond Dave.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
You know, in the preamble of AA, it says the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. If you don't have the desire to stop drinking coffee, stop having the alcohol, it's just not going to work. I've been sober 38 years because I get arrested every time I drink. I spent 10 months in Walpole State Prison in 1982 for making homebrew in Norfolk State Prison.
Wow.
Yeah, it's stupid. It's stupid, I'll tell you.
So you finally kicked it. You finally kicked it, huh?
And I kicked it. I've been sober 38 years. I smoked a weed a couple of times through the days, but I don't get arrested smoking pot. I don't, I don't black out. I went to jail for a crime I don't even remember.
What was the crime, Diamond Dave?
Assault to rob, unarmed.
Hmm.
Huh. I got a 10-year Concord sentence for it. I did 22 months on it, and I quit drinking. I'm not doing that again.
Wow.
I'm not doing that again.
All right, Dave. Well,
thanks for the call, Dave.
Yeah, Dave. Wow, that's some hardcore there, literally. I mean, assaults with unarmed robbery.
Basically.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes, that he doesn't remember, that he blacks out.
Oof, that's not good. Brad's up next. Hey, Brad in San Diego. What's up, Brad?
Hey, gentlemen. You know what? You only got me on here for 95 minutes on hold. Last week it was 98 minutes, so I appreciate that.
Should we put you back on hold to break the record?
I wanted to go to 100.
You know? Always next week.
Mocking hot.
What's up?
That's from SoCal. I'm trying to turn everybody on to you here.
Well, we appreciate it.
Josh Gordon, when I heard that Josh Gordon was petitioning for reinstatement, I was thinking, well, maybe, because of what happened with Tyreek Hill getting a free pass, but it still doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And he did get reinstated. I was pleasantly surprised to see that because of, number one, what he does for the offense of the Patriots. That's going to be fantastic in my mind. But going back to the man who makes the decisions, it's like either he has titanium cojones or, like Andy was saying, he's got rocks in his head. You know?
Who are we talking about here? Roger Goodell?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And,
Roger.
Do you buy into this, that, you know, the idea that he has a soft spot for Josh Gordon, that's playing into some decisions here?
Now when you guys mentioned that, I'm thinking to myself, maybe he does.
Making, but I would argue, I believe Martavis Bryant applied for reinstatement before Josh Gordon, correct?
Yes.
And I have heard nothing in terms of his reinstatement.
Right. You know what it is? Because Martavis Bryant, is he currently a free agent? He doesn't have a team.
Is he a free agent? Or
because he was with the Raiders
last.
But not anymore, and then he got cut, and now he's sort of a free agent. You got to remember one thing. Again, you got to look at Roger Goodell. There's sort of an MO to why he made this decision a couple days after Robert Kraft put one of the world's biggest entertainers, Jay-Z, and Roc Nation, and let them be sort of the social rights activists and in charge of entertainment at halftime of the Super Bowl, and let that sort of be the thing and the conduit in between that and the NFL. So then Kraft did a solid for Goodell. Goodell did a solid for Kraft. That's the way I look at it.
When did this information hit? Friday night at 6
right.
something.
It was a dump, what they call the news dump.
I mean, this is old school dump.
Yes.
Old school.
This is Kevin Cullen.
So,
yes.
I don't know if that, I find it hard to believe that's a coincidence. If they wanted it to be more than that, I don't think they'd be dumping it Friday night. So maybe that would lead to your idea that there was some back and forth quid pro quo going on here. But I do believe Martavis Bryant's a free agent. I do believe he applied for reinstatement before Josh Gordon.
And the NFL has
not. I've heard nothing yet.
Nothing.
Next Friday night, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. 617-779-7937. Mark James, Andy Hart here with you till 3 o'clock. Don't go anywhere.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.